Welcome to On DOD on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Now your host, Jared Serbu.
It is 5 minutes past the hour on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbu. Thanks for listening to another edition of On DOD. In 1982, Chris Devlin Young and several shipmates, the air crew of a Coast Guard C-130 aircraft in Alaska, were on a mission to the island of Attu in the Aleutian Island chain. The destination was so remote that it's much closer to Russia than to mainland Alaska. According to the Coast Guard's official log of aviation accidents, visibility on the flight quickly deteriorated and the plane crashed into a mountainside. Two Coast Guardsmen were killed that day. Devlin Young survived, but in the process of trying to save his fellow crew members, he suffered irreversible spinal damage, leaving him completely paralyzed below the knees and partially paralyzed below the waist. He was angry for several years after the crash, until, he says, his life was changed by sports. At a winter veterans clinic, he was introduced to the sport of monoskiing. He now travels the world racing down mountainsides at 70 miles per hour in international competitions. He's won numerous medals in the process, including several gold and silvers at the Paralympic Games, World Cup, and X Games competitions. When he's not skiing, he spends his time counseling and mentoring a new generation of wounded warriors returning from Iraq and Afghanistan. Devlin Young stopped by our studios after a visit to Walter Reed Bethesda National Military Medical Center. In this hour, we talk about how the military's attitude toward disabled veterans has changed since the accident 30 years ago, and what Devlin Young says is the unique power of sports to help wounded warriors overcome their disabilities. We started by talking about how he got into monoskiing in the first place.
I got hurt in 1982 in a crash in the military, in an airplane crash up in Alaska, and we were looking for runway in the fog in what was considered, and nobody ever called us for help in good weather, and so it was always bad weather when we went somewhere, but we ended up hitting a mountain instead of coming out of the fog and finding a runway. Broke my back and ended up for, it was a couple of years worth of, and I still, even today, I'm 30 years now in the wheelchair, and still today I'm angry about being in the wheelchair, but then I was angry and destructive, and just wanted to make everybody else angry during one of the stays at the Veterans Hospital out in California where I was doing my rehab. One of the therapists asked me, hey, do you want to go skiing? And I said no, and he persisted for about a week. And eventually I ended up saying yes, and I think it was somewhere right after he said, come on, you'll like it, it's free. And I thought, oh, okay, whatever, maybe get this guy off my back, and I'll say yes. And it took two turns, literally, one right turn and one left turn to figure out that this was going to be the rest of my life. Yeah. This was the Disabled Veterans Winter Sports Clinic. And I went to even before the very first one, it was an experimental year. And so I've been to all of the Veterans Winter Sports Clinics 26 years worth, I think it is. I think this will be their 26th year coming up. So for me, I've been skiing for 27 because I went that season before the actual official Veterans Winter Sports Clinic when they had official name. But, it was an attempt to introduce disabled veterans to a new sport, which really wasn't a new sport because I learned to ski and one of the instructors was a World War II veteran.
How big was that? Was that sort of event then compared to today? Has it grown over the years substantially?
That event has grown immensely. The Winter Sports Clinic today that I just went to was held out in Snowmass, Colorado, and there were some 400 participants. Guys of all different forms of disability, from blindness to amputation to paraplegia and quadriplegia, traumatic brain injuries, and some of the horrible injuries, triple amputees that we're seeing come back today from places like Afghanistan and Iraq. And to the first Winter Sports Clinic, I think there were six of us, and we were all in wheelchairs, all paraplegics. And then the very next year, it was held out of the Grand Junction Veterans Hospital. A guy by the name of Sandy Trombetta really spearheaded and got the whole event started and was the director of the event for 25 years until he retired just this last year. Mm-hmm. There were, I believe it was 70 veterans, approximately 70 veterans, and it was the whole gambit. There were visually impaired veterans and amputation, paraplegic like myself, and quadriplegic as well.
I mean, I guess one impact on that has got to be the fact that we have a lot more newly wounded warriors now than we did 20 years ago.
You know, it really is. Just today I visited Walter Reed. I'm not even sure if it's Army or Navy or the Joint Hospital now. Just visited that hospital today and got a chance to see their new workout facility and their new physical therapy rooms and some of the wonderful technology that they're using over there to promote health, teach these guys how to get active again. And they understand, the therapists and administrators there at the hospital, understand the value of sport and the value of just the, I know for me, it gave me back self-confidence. And it gave me confidence, period. It didn't make my disability go away, but it sure made it easier to deal with on a daily basis. So through sport, you could see over there, those guys have all been introduced to all the different types of sports that there are, introduced to the U.S. Paralympics, which is the highest level of sport, if you wanted to say get into competition, which quite a few of us from the military are definitely into competition. It seems like it's always a natural fit to just segue right out of military service into some form of competition. But it's definitely been very interesting ride. It wasn't encouraged as much as it is today, but there were more disabled veterans then when I learned participating in sport. But it was disabled veterans doing it for each other and doing it by themselves, where today it's the administration and, you know, the coming right out of the Pentagon and right from the DOD and from the very top, from the Secretary of Veterans Affairs all the way down the pipeline, where the encouragement's coming from. So it's nice now to see, because when I started, about 70% of my team, the Alpine ski team, was disabled veterans. And today, I'm one of only two. And last year, before, I was the only one. Only disabled veteran. And they've just moved on and done other things, and new veterans weren't encouraged as much as they are today. Mm. Alpine skiing is probably one of the more difficult sports to learn. It's one of those few sports that, especially the ones that I like, that have consequences. You know, say like maybe hockey or something like that has consequences. You know, you get in some guy's face and he'll get right back.
Sure.
But that encouragement is going to breed a brand new generation of disabled veterans that, like the World War II disabled veterans that taught me how to ski, passed along a legacy of just activity and health. And I turned that activity and health into sport. I'm 50 years old, and I've been on the U.S. team for 22 years. I've been on the U.S. ski team and on the national team. And just last year, I won at the World Championships just last past season. So I'm not slowing down. I have 156 total wins. And at World Championships, it's my third World Championship gold. Yeah, yeah. And at the Paralympics, I have 2 gold medals. At the X Games, I have 1 gold medal. There are many, many others along the way. World Cup championships and World Cup races and national championships and international championships and such. There's so many, it took about a week to figure out how many there were.
Just an aside, how does your event differ at the X Games than at the other competitions? Is there a more extreme version of mono skiing?
Yeah, there is. X Games for us is kind of the pinnacle of our sport. I mean, last time around in Vancouver in 2010, for us as winter athletes, it was the pinnacle of our sport, really. And in one day, you were either the Paralympic champion and the best in the world, or you weren't. And at X Games, it brings this whole new level, because now we've entered into the world of extreme sport. And in a way that ESPN, who administers X Games and puts it on, invited us, the disabled athletes, the monoskiers specifically, to come as an exhibition sport 6 years ago now, I believe it is. But when they invited us, we came, and the other athletes that were there, the, if you want to think of great names, the Sean Whites of the X Games, treated us exactly like they would treat any other athlete that was there to try to win a gold medal at the X Games. And then after I did win a gold medal at the X Games, we were treated exactly like any other athlete. So it was a level of acceptance and a level of sport because we did something super dangerous. And ski racing is dangerous, but X Games is even more dangerous. Mm-hmm. It's even more on top of the normal danger of alpine ski racing. Now I'm alpine ski racing, and I'm doing it with four guys right next to me. You know, and we're rubbing elbows in the air and things like that. And the crashes are, if you crash and you could get run over, the guy behind you could just be so close he can't stop. Sure. And pow, he hits you. So it took us to a brand new level, and it showed the people that saw it. We have been for ESPN, they track what sport is the most watched, and they use a rating system. Don't even ask me how that rating system works. They figured out that our event, our final event for 3 years in a row, for these past 3 years in a row, it has been the most watched single event, even more so than Sean White's gold medals. Yeah. So pretty freaking amazing.
That's incredible.
That's Chris Devlin Young, a Coast Guard veteran injured and partially paralyzed in a Coast Guard airplane accident 30 years ago. He now spends his time, as you just heard, in the sport of monoskiing and helping a new generation of wounded warriors get past their disabilities through sports. We'll come back after a short break and talk more. This is On DOD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbia.
Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
Welcome back to On DOD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbu. Talking this week with Chris Devlin Young, a Coast Guard veteran first wounded in an airplane crash 30 years ago in 1982 in Alaska. He's now a Paralympian in the sport of monoskiing. He's won several gold and silver medals along the way, spends his time when he's not on the mountain counseling and mentoring a new generation of wounded warriors from Iraq and Afghanistan. In the last segment, we heard about his sport. Let's hear more now about how he interacts with the new generation of veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan.
I want to go back to something you said earlier, which is the difference between when you were first injured and first started skiing. I think you said it was veterans helping veterans at that point, whereas now it's very much a government-sponsored activity. What caused that change, do you think, and what's it going to take to sustain that, or if there is any danger of that not being sustained?
So the big change is from then, when it was just veterans like my buddy helping me and me helping a new buddy, to where it's support coming from inside the system and inside the DOD. The support is the acceptance of the fact that we are disabled, and this is our life, and then we are moving past that disability, and part of that move past is sport. And that sport avenue for us is U.S. Paralympics. So the biggest support that we've gotten is just the recognition of this is what life is, where in the past, disabilities were a bit shuffled to the side, like it happens in community from time to time. It's just the nature of the beast. And so inside the system now, these guys are getting hurt wherever it is, whether it's here in the States and they get in an accident, or whether it's an IED in Afghanistan. They're coming back, and most of these guys want to get right back into active duty. And the Department of Defense is allowing that, where there's been a lot of resistance, and you had to go to court, and you had to fight, and you had to be a huge advocate for yourself. And it was only the top 1% of all the possible people that could go back to active duty that were allowed to go back. And now the attitude is, if you want to, you have a spot, yeah, and you can come back. So that support, that recognition of I'm still a human, I'm still a member of the military, I still want to serve my country, and the being allowed to still do that for us is huge. And that support, that's really where the big supports come.
And did that culture change on the government side? Is that kind of an Iraq and Afghanistan era phenomenon, or did it start before that?
You know, I can't point at exactly when that started. Pick a day, and on Monday, such and such a day, it happened. I think definitely it's because there are so many more. The war is so, it's fought in such a cheap way now. There's not uniforms on both sides, and, you know, folks got injured and were killed in action in every conflict, but we're seeing a lot more because the medical care is better and first response is better. So guys are coming back from these catastrophic injuries and living. And because of the way the injuries are being sustained, it's an injury not to kill an opponent. It's an injury to inflict just damage and cause, you know, lots of people to have to take care of that person and then take away the fight by demoralizing people. And it really hasn't done that. Our morale is higher than it's ever been. So, yeah, I'd say it's both. I'd say it's definitely because of the conflicts in Iraq and Afghanistan, and it's evolved. Disabilities all across the board, especially here in the United States, there's a better awareness. There's an easier acceptance of the fact that life happens.
Talk to me some more about the power of sports to, as you said, give yourself confidence again as a wounded warrior. Why is sports the channel for that? You mentioned competition. Is that really what it's all about?
For me, you might say that. It's definitely a driving force in my life. And everything I do, there's competition somehow or another involved, whether it's just pushing down the side of the street and wanting to be faster than the person next to me. And it's not really a race, but sometimes it ends up being a mental challenge that to overcome. And for me, sport, and for a lot of guys and gals that I know that have disabilities, sport has definitely given us a physical outlet to overcome this physical limitation. And I definitely did, and still sometimes do, feel like half a man because of this disability. I'm sitting in a wheelchair. I can't climb stairs without a process, say crawling or something like that, and having somebody help me carry the wheelchair up. And I actually recently climbed a mountain to ski and had to have a lot of help, but I had that help carrying the equipment, not carrying me. So I actually crawled up there, and that was the accomplishment, was to be able to do that. And it was competition. It was competition with myself, and to prove to myself that I could overcome this disability that on a daily basis reminds me that I'm still in a wheelchair, that life has changed. I'm not walking around. I'm not running on the beach like I did when I was a kid. So sport gives me that extra bonus of competition and the camaraderie of teammates that help make my disability disappear from time to time.
So when you go and visit this new generation of wounded warriors at Walter Reed Bethesda like you did today, what do you tell them? Do you say, hey man, you got to get involved in sports, or are they already there?
You know, I am probably the best and the worst person for these types of visits to go to talk to young guys, young injuries, and because I tell them the truth. I tell them it's going to suck. Being disabled isn't fun, but it's not the end. And there is a lot that you can do. Look what I've done. I've been 22 years on the national team. I travel the world. I go so many different places that it's routine when I get on a plane at my local airport. I don't even show ID at the counter because they know me by first name. And it's rare that I don't fly in first class because I just get bumped up because they know me by name. I travel so much that the benefits, the ability for me to go and just outreach that I'm able to do and talk to schools and talk to other veterans and go to hospitals. And for me, going to hospitals is a very difficult thing to do because I really don't like hospitals. But I get a chance to give these guys, and not sugarcoat anything at all. This is life, and it's not going to be easy. There's going to be problems, and it's not going to be fun. And if you thought you were depressed about things before, wait till a couple of years down the road and you remember how good things used to be, and you've got a few years of experience of how good things aren't. You know, sport has definitely elevated my thinking to be more open to just being happy and being a productive member of society again. I work more volunteering now than I ever did work for a salary before.
When you talk to these guys at the hospitals, do you see yourself 30 years ago? Do they have that same sense of anger?
You know, that's a good question. It's probably the one thing, and I tell people it's the smell of a hospital, but it's probably the one thing that I see the most, because I can see me on that mat trying to do those exercises the first time, or arguing with the therapist about, no, I can't do that. And them saying, no, really, you can, because so-and-so was able to do it, and so-and-so was able to do it, and this really does work, and you really will have a better life. And not believing them. Yeah, it brings back instantaneous, very tangible, you can taste them and smell them kind of memories.
Do you have extra credibility, you think, when you go and talk to these guys because of what you've been through? Do you see a light go off in their heads when they see, oh yeah, you really can?
You know, let me tell you a story about my lying in the hospital bed and some guy like me coming in, and he did what I don't do now, is he rolled in his wheelchair, and I was lying in my huge cast and over my whole body, and I had rods and surgery and all these different things, and just trying to learn how to sit up and without passing out so soon after my disability. And he came zipping in his fancy little sport wheelchair, and you know, life's gonna be great, you're gonna be able to play tennis and basketball, and you're gonna have so much fun, and everything's gonna be awesome. And I thought, you get out of my face. I don't even want to talk to you. Get away from me. That's not true. This is the worst thing that could possibly happen to me. Because right at that time, I was really starting to realize what my life was going to be like with a disability. It took months for me to really get a handle on this is what life is in a wheelchair. It's not easy. There's a lot that it entails that you wouldn't, that would make the strongest of people squeamish. And you wouldn't want to tell anybody. So I remember that instance and try to be the exact opposite person and try to be more honest and open. So I hope it does give me credibility to talking to these guys and letting them know that, you know, I was there. I did what you did, and I found it really difficult, and I found it the worst, lowest parts of my life. And it gets better, different, but I'm still in a wheelchair, and I'd still rather not be.
That's Chris Devlin-Young, Paralympian and multiple gold and silver medal winner in the sport of monoskiing. He was first injured 30 years ago in a Coast Guard airplane accident in 1982 in Alaska. When we come back, we'll talk about sustaining the changes that have taken place in both the Department of Defense and the broader nation after the current wars in Iraq and Afghanistan wind down. This is on DOD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jared Servia. Welcome back to On DOD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbit. Take a moment to reintroduce our guest for the hour. It's Chris Devlin-Young. He's a disabled veteran hurt when he and his Coast Guard shipmates crashed into a mountainside on their way to a remote island in the Aleutian Island chain of Alaska 30 years ago. The accident left him mostly paralyzed below the waist and confined to a wheelchair, at least most of the time. When he was cajoled into a pilot project for wounded veterans, he took right away to the sport of monoskiing. Since then, he's been claiming gold and silver medals in Paralympics, World Cup, and X Games competitions, racing down mountaintops at 70 miles an hour. When he's not in the snow, he spends much of his time talking to service members who were hurt in Iraq and Afghanistan during visits to facilities like Walter Reed Bethesda Hospital. He told me earlier in the hour the DOD and VA have come a long way in their treatment of wounded warriors since he was first hurt in 1982.
I want to go back to the question I asked earlier because I didn't give you a chance to finish answering, which was, do you feel that there's any threat that, the level of support that's now coming from the government is, not going to be able to be sustained?
You know, I worry about that. You worry that this is a, you know, the cause du jour of because there's a conflict and because the sentiment in the U.S. for veterans and people are truly, and it's, I suppose you could probably equate this or liken it to and compare it to how people felt about veterans right after World War II. And the sentiment and the, you know, the, just the acceptance and the outpouring of goodwill from, everybody in society to, veterans and especially disabled veterans is very high right now. So as that wanes, as hopefully these conflicts end sooner than later and, that slows down, yeah, it's a big possibility that it just disappears because it's not the cause of today.
Even though things have gotten a lot better over the past 30 years, I would assume you don't think everything's perfect. What would you recommend VA and DOD and other agencies should or could be doing better?
Well, they are doing better, and they're definitely doing better from what I remember 30 years ago, and from what I saw today, communication between the different agencies and the different, even if it's between the different services. And I had the opportunity just recently to go to the Republican National Convention down in Tampa, Florida, and introduce Senator McCain. And he's a Navy veteran, and I'm a Coast Guard veteran. So naturally, right away, I started ribbing him for being a Navy veteran and called him a squid. And he loved it.
Puddle, maybe.
He did. Well, no, he said, oh, you're one of those guys that walks to shore, right? So we, you know, that rivalry between the services is a good thing, as long as it's fun and kept light, like we keep it. But in the higher, branches, and not the higher branches, but in the higher offices, that rivalry becomes loggerheads, and sometimes things aren't able to continue because the lines of communication drop, and that's probably the biggest avenue is reaching out to the people with the experience and then sharing that experience to the younger generations, whether it be the new doctors or the new therapists or the new patients. And then making sure that information gets all across the board and not, not allowing it to mire down because you're Army and I'm Navy or something like that.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned your appearance at the convention. We are not a political station by any means, but I'd be interested to hear how that all came together. You want to share that story?
Absolutely. I was asked by a friend at the Pentagon if I'd like to go and do the Pledge of Allegiance, represent U.S. Paralympics, and I told him, well, you know, I'm really not a Republican and hadn't really voted that way pretty much ever. He said, that doesn't matter. This is about Paralympics, and this is about your military service, and I thought, absolutely, I'd love this to take this opportunity to do something like that. And it grew into, not 100% sure, but I do know that Senator McCain's people knew that I was coming and that I was a disabled veteran and was there as a Paralympian representing my country. And they asked if I would come and introduce the senator. So for me, this not being a political station is perfect because it wasn't a political trip. It was representing my country. And it doesn't matter what political party you're in. Once you join the military, you are representing your country. And it's the next step that I took into Paralympic sport that's allowed me to represent my country again and got me to the floor at the Republican convention. It was quite an experience.
That's great. We heard your comments about the future for the government side of the equation, on the wounded warrior side of the equation. What advice would you give them?
You know, it's not going to suck forever, for sure. And then some days are going to be better than others, but everybody has that. Everybody has some days that are better than others. Maybe yours are at a different level than other people, and mine are at a different level than yours. It is what it is, and a person needs to remember who they are and remember why they even got to the place that they're in the first place. You were defending freedom. You were defending our country, and you were putting yourself on the line so that people could protest in the streets. And you get shot in other countries for doing stuff like that. I mean, we live in an amazing place and in an amazing time. Yes, now here we are with these disabilities, and some of them tremendously severe, like some of the guys I saw today. And life's not over. Life's different. Life's really, really different, but it's definitely not over. There's so much more that you can do. And like I said, I volunteer now more hours than I ever worked before, and the personal satisfaction I get and just the sense of accomplishment and the duty that I feel to volunteer those hours. I feel like Dick Wilson was a 10th Mountain Division veteran, and he got shot in the arm on Riva Ridge during World War II when they had that famous climb the 10th Mountain Division did in the at night. And when they went up over the ridge, he took a whatever that machine gun is into his arm and got taken out. He taught me how to ski, was one of the instructors at the very first lesson, along with the director of the clinic, Sandy Trombetta, and he gave me a new life, and you know, he wrote a check for my new life, and I've been trying to repay that in as many ways possible and as many opportunities as I possibly could. And as you, the new disabled veteran, wounded warrior, whatever you want to call yourself, we're all still the same. And we didn't try to give our lives for our country. We did. And it's yes, you need to take care of yourself, but yes, you still need to take care of everybody else too.
Chris Devlin Young, a Coast Guard veteran, partially paralyzed in a 1982 plane crash, now a Paralympic skier, the winner of several medals in numerous international competitions. We're talking this hour about his life, how he used sports to overcome his disability, and how he urges other wounded warriors to do the same. We'll come back for one more segment with Chris after one more break. This is On DOD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbin.
Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, the only radio station dedicated to news for and about the federal government and government contractors. Find us at federalnewsradio.com.
Back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, I'm Jared Serbu. Our guest this week is Chris Devlin Young, three-time Paralympic World Championship gold medal winner. His sport is monoskiing, something he took up shortly after he was injured, paralyzed from the knees down and partially paralyzed from the waist down in a 1982 plane crash while he was on a mission with the Coast Guard. We'll close out the hour with one final segment talking to Chris.
So you obviously spend a lot of time in the mountains, a lot of time visiting wounded warriors, disabled veterans. What else do you do if that doesn't fill up your entire schedule, which I suspect it probably does?
Well, you know, I, on behalf of U.S. Paralympics, I try to get out to schools and to other events and promote the Paralympic name and the spirit of sport. And then as well for hobbies, I'm married and, my wife Donna runs a Shakespeare theater in the summertime. So I help out with that and build the sets. I'll sweep them, but I'm not going to act. And, I'd rather go 80 miles an hour down the mountain than stand on a stage. Do some public speaking and such, as well as I build acoustic guitars. So,
very cool. Talk to me a little bit more about your sport itself. I'm curious about it. Mono skiing, it's called, right? Is there really only one form of it? And how hard was it to pick up?
So, and once again, here I am, not the good example. I picked it up right away. It took little less than a day for me to really learn how to do it.
No,
it may be only a couple of turns. But I had the kind of mentality, I had the right kind of people around me and the right kind of equipment, and it just clicked. Everything went
easier than
perfect.
Two skis, do you think, or is it just something that clicked with your particular brain?
Probably not easier than two skis. Never having skied before, so I'm not really sure of a comparison and how you'd compare that. But monoskiing is very similar to riding a bike. Once, as a kid, and most of us learn as kids, you learn that momentum is your friend, generally. And once you learn to go a little bit faster, now the machine, the bike, the monoski, holds you up. And gravity is the power, where on a bike you have to power and use and pedal. In monoskiing, the mountain and the gravity of going downhill is the power. And once you allow a little bit of momentum, all of a sudden control comes. And it's very quickly. Once you overcome that initial fear of it's kind of like the go-kart effect. If you've ever ridden in a go-kart, 30 miles an hour feels like 100 miles an hour because you're so close to the ground. So overcoming that, I don't know if I'd call it fear, but just overcoming the sense of speed to starting to enjoy it, then your learning curve goes very, very fast. And then after that, if say like myself, you get into competition, it takes a lifetime to get really fast.
Yeah. And would you say it's kind of become a more or less mainstream sport at this point?
You know, it really has. I do believe it has become mainstream in that you see monoskis at almost every single ski area. No matter where I go, there's either monoskiers that have brought their own equipment, or the ski school has equipment and certified instructors where I could rent a piece of equipment and come and get a lesson and go out and learn how to ski. You know, and the one grand and beautiful thing about that is the person, veteran or non-veteran, doesn't matter, with a disability, can ski with their families. You know, you've got a father that's got two kids and used to play with them and run and do whatever, maybe even ski beforehand, and now say is in a wheelchair or has an amputation or something like that, and he's feeling a little less than the whole person or whole man. And skiing is kind of the one sport that I've experienced, because it's gravity powered. Everybody rides a chairlift and everybody slides down the mountain on equipment. You can ski with your family, and it's like nothing was any different.
Right.
You're a winter sports guy, obviously, and as you said, you got into the sport of monoskiing through a veterans clinic almost 30 years ago now. But we were talking off the air, and there's also VA summer sports clinics, which I guess is going on this summer as well, and you're about to go visit that and talk to wounded warriors out there. Tell me about that.
Sure. So with the success of the Veterans Winter Sports Clinic, a Veterans Summer Sports Clinic was started, and it's being held out in San Diego through the VA system out there. And it's another introduce disabled veterans, which whether you're a wounded warrior or not, you're still a disabled veteran in some way, shape, or form, and introduce you to sport, to some of the summer sports. And it's that winter sports clinic, that first one that I was introduced to skiing, that took me all the way to the highest levels of skiing now. But really, the mission of the clinic is just to get you active and involved. And now the summer, with the addition of now the summer sports clinic, which is only a few years old now, which happens in September out in San Diego, is hopefully going to teach all of the new guys that go, and some that are returning veterans, there's stuff to do, and it's fun, and I can be active, and because I'm active, I'm healthy. And because I'm healthy, I'm happy. I'm 50 years old, and my blood pressure's better now, and my cholesterol's better now than it was when I was 20 when I got hurt.
In your experience, when disabled veterans go out and decide they want to go after sports, does it kick in right away? Do they struggle to find a sport that works for them that they really like? Do a lot of folks drop out?
You know, it seems like the veterans I know and the guys and gals that have gone on to Paralympic sport, from the introduction of sport to Paralympic sport, it clicked right away. There was something, they'd done it before, or it was something so brand new that it just seemed to click, and they thought, aha, here's something that I can do. And, you know, there's quite a few guys over in London right now competing on the U.S. Paralympic team.
Besides the competition thing that you mentioned before, there's got to be something about control, right? I mean, to feel like you're in control of something which you probably felt like you lost to a certain degree, yeah?
Yeah, you know, Jared, that's exactly what it is. And it's because this wheelchair has control of my life and controls where I can go and what I can do, how steep a hill I can climb, or not climb, what kind of car can I get into or out of, what kind of treatment do I get at a restaurant, and all those things are out of my control, in control of the wheelchair. And when I do my sport, skiing, I'm in control, and it's physical, because my disability is physical. That physical control allows me to kind of forget that I am disabled from time to time.
Chris, it's been great talking to you. Thanks so much for your service, and thanks for everything you're doing now. Really appreciate you coming in.
Well, thank you, Jared. It was wonderful to be here.
Chris Devlin-Young, Coast Guard veteran, injured in a plane crash during an Alaska mission in 1982. As you heard during the hour, he now travels the world racing down mountainsides at 70 miles an hour in international competitions. He's won numerous medals in the process, including several gold and silvers at the Paralympic Games, World Cup, and X Games competitions. He now uses his life experience to counsel a new generation of wounded warriors. If you'd like to see Chris in action, it's pretty impressive. We'll post videos and links on our On DoD show page at federalnewsradio.com. That's it for this week's edition of On DoD. Thanks very much for joining us. I'm Jared Serbin.
You've been listening to On DoD with Federal News Radio DoD reporter Jared Serbu. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. On DoD, Wednesday afternoons at 2, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.